Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Lily Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we are on the third episode of Season 4, the 50th episode overall.
Silver Anniversary.
Not the Golden Jubilee?
I don't know what that is.
Neither. But that's just like, after they have the Silver Anniversary, the Queen has like a Jubilee at some point.
The Queen?
Yeah, you don't know about this. You're the one who brought up these...
The Silver... Isn't... Oh, wait. No, I got it wrong. Isn't a Silver Anniversary 25 years?
I have no idea, but I know a Golden Jubilee is in there, and that would seem to be the most appropriate one.
I don't know if a Jubilee has anything to do with an anniversary, does it?
It does. If you're the Queen of... You haven't
the
been watching...
Queen of England's anniversary?
Yeah. Like, when... based on how long she rules, they throw these big parties. So...
Not based on, like, the age of the British Empire?
No, it's based on how long she rules. So I think she had her Golden Jubilee or something recently.
Oh.
Or maybe it was a Platinum Jubilee. She's actually been ruling...
Platinum?
Well, she's been ruling so long that she's, like, crossing thresholds and have never been crossed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure 25 is silver, so 50 is golden. So maybe she did have a golden...
75 might be golden.
Oh.
But... Wow, we have really diverted. We haven't even said the name of the episode.
All right.
The episode is called Courage... And this is a really, really good episode.
Mm-hmm.
Really excellent overall. Sonia's currently looking up to see what a Golden Jubilee is.
I can't rest until I know the truth.
All right, while she looks us up, I'll set us up here. So this episode opens on Muir Island, where we meet our old pals Moira, McTaggart, and Morph. That's difficult to say all at once. And Morph is still healing from all his traumatic brain injuries, be it from, you know, getting killed by the Sentinels or being resurrected as an evil guy by Mr. Sinister and becoming good and then going back to bad and running away to South America. Morph's been all over the place in this series. And he's really, I guess a running theme is that he's like, it takes a long time to get over being brought back from the dead. Would you not say?
Yeah, he was doing some intense rehabilitation, it looked like, on Muir Island in Scotland there.
Right.
In case you were wondering...
I mean, it's just funny that this show deals with, like, the intense trauma of coming back to life from being clinically dead.
Yeah.
You know,
well, you know, that does happen to a small percentage of society.
But probably not to the extent that it has happened to Morph. I think Morph was dead.
Oh.
He was, it was like...
Not just slightly dead?
Yeah, not like...
All you Princess Bride fans out there?
Princess Bride dead, where he was on the Wheel of Death or whatever it was.
Uh-huh.
You know.
I know.
Morph was like incinerated by laser beams from ginormous sentinels.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was pretty dead. But Mr. Sinister put like a green germ in his head and he came back to life.
Mm-hmm. And then Moira McTaggart helped him out the rest of the way.
Right. So he's had a rough go of it.
Yeah.
By
the way...
Same clothing that he's been wearing since he was killed, but go on.
The 50th... No. Yes, the Golden Jubilee is the 50th year of a monarch's reign.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The titanium... Wait, titanium? No, what did you say? Platinum.
Yeah.
Why did I say titanium? the Platinum Jubilee is 70 years. That hasn't happened yet.
Oh, I see. So, hey, very appropriate. The Golden Jubilee of the X-Men Task Podcast.
Wait, did it happen yet? I gotta stop talking.
Okay, you stop talking. Yeah, for podcast, talking is not the best. So then we, as the show is wont to do, we zip along to somewhere, looks like in West Virginia, because there's an old map that comes up in the show that sort of shows where we are in various places. And we're at the Zydex Polymer Laboratories, where some scientist is yelling at someone on the phone about $800 million in robot expenses.
Oh, yeah, it hasn't happened yet. It'll be in 2022.
Okay, let's all hope and pray the Queen lives to see that day.
Sorry, I'm going to let this go now. Please continue.
I will. So, like I said, Zydex Polymer Laboratories,
mm-hmm.
where they're spending $800 million on robot supplies.
Mm-hmm. I like that they tell us the budget.
Right, that's kind of interesting. But and right away I felt like, oh, they're building supplies for the Sentinels, but they're not.
That's what
because,
I thought too.
Because our old pals, the Sentinels, do a like a classic like heist of this facility,
mm-hmm.
and make out with like tons of rolled up polymers. And we learn later that the type of polymers they're stealing, it's as thin as like cotton fabric, but is stronger than...
100 times stronger than steel.
Yeah, but probably not as strong as adamantium.
Right.
Right. So they're not quite making... 100 times stronger than steel, still probably not as strong as adamantium.
But it's thin and it looks like plastic.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and it's not infused into anybody's bones yet.
That's right. And doesn't it probably not as good as vibranium, but out of the adamantium vibranium ballpark. Boy, that's going to be funny when they merge the X-Men with the Disney universe. Mm. How are they going to square away? It'd be interesting to see Black Panther fight Wolverine and see what's stronger, vibranium or adamantium.
I don't know if that's a fair test, though.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Black Panther's bones are not infused or covered with vibranium.
No, but his outfit is.
Yeah, but...
So if Wolverine slashes into vibranium, does it cut? That's the question.
I see. Well, it's not beyond the realm of possibility at this point.
You know, and this is to all our X-Tas fans out there, the super smart comic book ones. I swear to God, I had, like, an old Captain America trading card that said his shield was made out of adamantium, not vibranium. And I could be totally wrong there. And the playing card from, like, 1992 might have been wrong as well. But now, like, they've since... If what I'm saying is correct, they've since updated the shield to being a vibranium thing.
Hmm.
You know, unbreakable vibranium as opposed to adamantium.
Mm-hmm.
And
do
also,
they say that it's vibranium?
Yeah, yeah, that's established. Huh. In the first Captain America movie, Howard Stark, who's Tony Stark's father, says to Captain America, oh, this shield, he's showing him different shields. He's like, this one's made of vibranium.
Oh, I forgot that.
Yeah, he's like, this is all the vibranium America has. And, I don't know, it's just kind of interesting, just these two fictional metals in the Marvel Universe, how they stack up compare. I need some analysis here from our X-Tas fans.
Hmm.
Anyway, we'll talk more about Black Panther later, but right now, what happens? Oh, yeah, the Sentinels are robbing this place.
Right.
And something interesting about the Sentinels I noticed right off the bat, they have different voices than we're accustomed to hearing them have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if they just, like... they had a different voice actor, or they just changed the voice around.
It's been a couple seasons. Yeah. Why not update?
I guess, but, like, I really, really love the classic Sentinel voice from seasons 1 through 3.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is one of the defining villain voices of my cartoon childhood.
Mm.
And so, well, but it's fine, though. It's not that distracting. And like we said in the last time we saw Master Mold, actually, in the recently, in the One Man Worth episodes, mm-hmm. his voice has kind of been updated to, like, a sassier British accent,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of bizarre. Anyway, cut to the X-Mansion. The X-Men get a red alert, and they're freaking out, as they always do. You know, they're always surprised. You know, not quite like... I guess when you're a superhero, there's a lot of red alerts, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Batman sees the bat signal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Superman doesn't really have a red alert. He can just hear things.
The Star Trek Enterprise is constantly on red alert.
Right. Well, they also may be on yellow alert too. So, but the Ghostbusters, most famously for me, the fire bell goes off and they slide down the pole.
Yeah.
And they have to spring into action. The X-Men, it's kind of like either Professor X sends out a mental alert or the mansion just starts blaring uncontrollably, and they're all usually woken up out of bed and grumbling about it. But it turns out it was all a fake because Professor X is throwing a secret party, and he's even keeping it a surprise from the other X-Men, too. The secret party is the return of the aforementioned Morph.
Mm-hmm.
He's coming back to the X-Men in his blue and yellow spandex outfit.
Yet again.
Yet again, and Beast is quoting a poet named Velasquez, where he says, "A return to the fold is truly one of life's greatest joys." And I don't know how true that is, to be honest. I feel like a lot of characters in fiction, when they return to the fold, it's usually not quite so joyful.
Mm-hmm. They're, like, defeated or...
or there's a twist.
Yeah.
Or everything's not as it seems to be.
Or they're walking into a trap.
Right. Or they're, like, forced to conform to something that they didn't want to conform to.
Hmm.
Or then they come back and they're joyful, but then they die right away, very tragic. So I feel like we're being set up for something here. Spoiler alert. You know, like, Morph's back now. Oh, they also make a point of mentioning that Rogue and Gambit are away.
Yeah.
They don't say where, but it's another mysterious departure from characters.
I mean, it happens sometimes, right, with other episodes and other mm-hmm. characters, too, because otherwise there's too many characters for them to really... focus on in an episode, yeah, I guess, but they don't say if they're, like, on a romantic getaway together or if they're on a mission or what.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, so Rogue and Gambit are nowhere to be found.
I like to think they're on a romantic getaway.
Yeah, I'd like to think that too. Yeah, maybe one of the they're redoing the vacation that got messed up with Nightcrawler,
right?
Where they went to the Swiss Alps or something. So, but then there's a breaking news alert where they learn about the Sentinel robbery of the factory. Well, they don't know it's the Sentinels yet. They just knew there's a big invasion into this robot factory. And Wolverine immediately volunteers Morph for this highly dangerous mission. And Morph is very game to like get right back into action. Mm-hmm. He starts morphing into cameos immediately. His first is John Wayne, which is kind of amusing. And then he does Strong Guy mm-hmm. from X-Factor and actually gives Strong Guy a line. I don't think he had a line in the time we saw him. So that's kind of funny. And Logan and Morph like hop into a mini X-Jet and they fly off to this factory somewhere. And they immediately deploy their like drone technology, pretty advanced for 1994 or 1995, before the era of drones, which now has befallen us mm-hmm. in society.
Yeah,
there's drones that you can buy them recreationally for like a few hundred bucks or something, but the X-Men were sporting them, you know, in the mid 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was funny and that stuck out. So they're on a mission, they're breaking into this facility. You know, Morph is turning into a soldier to break into the base. And he's basically reusing all the lines he had from the pilot episode, which was bizarre, where he says things like, feels like old times, and, you know, this mission, you know, other lines like that.
You just recognized it.
Yeah, it's like, exactly. It's like they basically just reuse the dialogue, which is, I guess it's like a callback, but it's also kind of weirdly.
I feel like it's cheap.
I don't know what the right word is. It's like a weird. It's like hacky in a way that he would just be. But I guess it shows like they had this friendship, they had a working relationship.
Yeah.
Wolverine
well,
and
that's
Beast.
Evident,
I mean, not Beast.
You know, yeah. Because it's not like Professor X is assigning Morph to go on this mission. Wolverine is the one who's like, all right, like we got a mission. Come on, Morph, let's go. And he wants it to be like a buddy thing because he clearly like feels guilty about what happened with Morph last time. He's the one that we saw get most broken up about like Morph's whole life trajectory.
Yeah.
So he like wants to make up for lost time and make up for leaving him and,
he aggressively volunteers him
and like Morph is into it, you know, he's excited to be back on the team, he feels like he's ready for adventure. So, you know,
I did like this one line from Wolverine where Morph says to him, don't get mushy on me, old pal, and Wolverine says, I don't get mushy.
And then he proceeds to slash right through a stone and cement wall.
Right, yeah, like a steel cement wall. And then Cyclops is chiding them, saying, you got to be careful or something. And Wolverine says, keep your shirt on, pretty boy. it's Wolverine refers to Cyclops as pretty boy. And then, but it turns out Wolverine smells some Sentinels. So he immediately says this is bad news for Morph. And he cuts the mission short right then and there. They start running out of the base. He doesn't tell Morph why, but then Morph sees a big Sentinel footprint in the ground, and he starts having his PTSD really badly.
Yeah, he has just basically a very condensed flashback for the benefit of any audience members that didn't see what happened to him in the first place.
But yeah, they show him being shot to death like five times in a row from like slightly different angles.
And I think it's a credit to the direction, that the animation, the storytelling, how quickly they condense that down into something that's mm-hmm. so powerful in just like a few seconds.
Yeah. I mean, it's like it's a credit to them because they do show that PTSD is a real thing and that our heroes, you know, are as likely to suffer mental and emotional damage as they are physical damage. So that is it's a wonderful thing to display. Why are you laughing at that?
It's a wonderful thing to display.
Well, you know,
PTSD flashbacks.
I mean, we can all use an awareness of any mental trauma or disease or trouble that people have. You know, it's like the 90s in many ways was the opening of the door to a lot of that overall societal acceptance. When for years it was taboo to express any kind of mental trouble that one might have. You just had to accept it, or, you know, if you went to a therapist, it was seen as weak, or, you know, all these types of things where if soldiers were returning from war, they just had to deal with PTSD and didn't have much support for decades. So, you know, it was like that's like one of the more positive human advancements, at least in Western civilization, of sort of an increased awareness of mental
health.
Mental health, exactly. I kept searching for that word and couldn't find it. Perhaps my mental health, not the best. So the X-Men, they return back to the X-Mansion. They're cleaning up the party, and they're all discussing what happened. They're worried that maybe they pushed Morph too fast into this. And Professor X also he's summarizing his fears with the Sentinels, saying that they're the X-Men's greatest villain, which is kind of like a nice... It's like it's different from the comics, because in the comics, Magneto is their greatest villain. And also in the movies, too, dare I say. Although, you know, he's a bit, like, gray back and forth, but still, he's their main foe in the movies. So, but in the cartoon, it's clearly the Sentinels. Magneto's not really the prominent character that he is in the cartoon as he would be probably under normal circumstances. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting to see Professor X spell that out. Where are we here? And then, like I said, spoilers, we see that Master Mold's head is still alive. We've known that to an extent because he was in the One Man's Worth episode. We saw Professor X explode him at the end of season one in a big fireball. But at the same time, we've still seen Bishop's future, where Sentinels roam about quite freely.
Yeah, really plague the mutants.
Right, so even though the X-Men took care of the Sentinels at the end of Season 1, they obviously still survived in some form, and this is sort of like hashing out that backstory more.
Mm-hmm.
And so Master Mold's alive, and his plan is he needs to get those polymers, because he needs to rebuild his body. He's just a head now.
Right.
And he's ordering his... And his robots are, like, dutifully, like, working in an underground cave somewhere, you know, building him a body and essentially, like, working like factory workers.
Mm-hmm.
And then Master Mold, he's, a little, like we said, a little more, like, pithy and British than he was originally. Originally, he just had the standard Sentinel robot voice, which I actually preferred because it was a bit more... To me, it's, like, menacing that they all have the same voice, even mm-hmm. the queen bee, so to speak.
Yeah.
But he is, he sends the Sentinels on a task. He needs three humans. He needs Trask and Gyrick, the scientist and the Black Ops financier of the original Sentinel project, because he needs them to help, like, finish this task. And he also wants Professor X, one, to sort of, like, humiliate him, get revenge, because mm-hmm. he's the one who blew up his body. But then it turns out later Master Mold reveals that he wants to create a cybernetic link with Professor X's mind so that he can control his mind and use his mind to hunt down all the mutants of the world and kill them.
Right.
Which is, Master Mold notes, is the highest of irony.
Right.
Yeah. What are you gonna
say? Also, like, the central plot point of the X-Men movie.
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Except for Magneto instead of Master
yeah,
Mold.
And all, similar, but not just even in that, that was like in X-Men 2 that they wanted to use Professor X's mind to either kill humans, what's his name? Stryker
yeah.
wants him to do that. But then Magneto takes over his mind briefly and wants him to kill all humans.
Yeah.
Did I say humans the first time? So
yeah,
mutants,
you did,
mutants the first and then humans, right.
Yeah.
Okay. And then it's also the plot of X-Men Apocalypse, essentially.
Right, exactly. It's just...
they keep Professor X's
everyone
mind is...
really wants to weaponize Professor X.
Yeah, exactly. So that's Master Mold's plan. So the Sentinels are off to capture these people. They first attack the mansion. It's kind of, like, menacing to see them flying around. Like, they show them flying over a kid's playground, and they just... Their jets on their feet are so powerful that they knock the kids over.
Mm-hmm.
And the X-Men see them from... The X-Men are just driving in their car somewhere in the highway, and they see them. It's a red alert at the X-Mansion again. Beast, like, straps on a laser cannon, and him and Wolverine go and start shooting the Sentinels. They're on the outside of the grounds. Professor X and Morph are, like, discussing Morph's problems. So he's kind of exposed. He's not in the safety of the mansion, which has a lot of laser turns and things. So the Sentinels, they're there to capture Professor X. They try their best to stop him, Wolverine and Beast. It's a lot of really great action sequences in this episode. A lot of great Wolverine slashing and hacking at the Sentinels.
Yeah.
And actually, when the one Sentinel grabs Professor X and takes him away, Wolverine dramatically, like, grabs onto his foot with the points of his claws, and he's just, you could see him, like, blasting off into, you know, the upper atmosphere, and Wolverine dramatically, like, slips off his toes.
Right, yeah.
And it's kind of funny when he lands, and Beast is like, "Are you okay?" And Wolverine's like, "Who cares?" So Professor X is kidnapped. I guess luckily Oh, and then Jean Grey, in her ever useless self, now that she's no longer the Phoenix, she tries to mentally scam for Professor X. And she does say something kind of interesting. She either says that he's blocked somehow or shielded, which is not that interesting. But the other thing she says, he might be unconscious.
Yeah.
So I guess when you're unconscious, her mental powers can't detect somebody. That doesn't seem...
I guess.
Like, that would be a hang-up for a psychic.
Huh. Oh, yeah. I didn't really think about that.
Right? Like, why would him being unconscious have anything to do with whether or not you can detect his, like, brain or life
sign? So Cerebro doesn't work on, like, sleeping mutants?
I wasn't even sure she was using Cerebro, was she? Did she have the helmet on?
No, she wasn't, but I'm just saying, like, if that's the way that works, where, like... Because Professor X uses the same kind of mutant location power that she has, and Cerebro is just an extension,
right,
like an amplification of that power.
Right, yeah, Cerebro, there's nothing special. But you're right, yeah, so if you're asleep, is that the best way to, like, get one over on Professor X or Jean Grey?
Just take a nap.
Yeah, just take a nap and you'll be fine. You'll be free from mental detection.
That's funny.
Yeah, that'd be funny if they were, like, fighting, you know, Magneto in the movies anyway, his helmet's supposed to block his telepathy.
Yeah.
Like, let's say they take his helmet, he's like, I got you now, Magneto. He's like, not so fast, and he, like, swallows a bunch of Ambien. It's like, you can't get me now. I'm fast asleep. So they've got, like, a big sentinel head in the rec room or the war room down there, and Beast is hacking at it, and they can't figure out
computer hacking, to be
right,
clear.
Yeah,
not like with a knife.
Right, yeah. Yeah. He's computer hacking furiously. He's quoting some more poetry. I didn't write it down this time. And they discover that the sentinel... they're tracking down two other people, Gyrick and Trask, in South America somewhere. And so the X-Men blast off on a mission. Worf wants to come, but Cyclops says he's
did
very...
Did you just say Worf?
Yeah, I did. That's a Star Trek Freudian slip. Cyclops, like, awkwardly tells Worf that you should stay behind. This is, like, too much for you.
Yeah.
And Worf is really humiliated.
Well, but not really. He's kind of like, yeah, I understand why you wouldn't, like, trust me with this, because he knows that...
Does he say that, or is he kind of sad about
it?
No,
he says something about that, because he's the one who, like, when they came back from that first part of the mission, like, he froze up, you know what
I mean?
He had a laser blaster.
Yeah, we didn't really mention that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he more freezes when Professor X is being kidnapped.
Right, because he, like, is, you know, still traumatized by his experience with the Sentinel, so he doesn't do anything to help, and then he, like, feels really bad about it when they get back to the X-Mansion.
Yeah,
he's
that's
like,
true.
I can't believe I just froze, you know? And, like, Cyclops is like, all right, I don't have time to listen to this right now, we gotta keep moving.
Yeah.
But also, you stay here.
Yeah. And then, so Gyrick and Trask, they're in the South American jungle somehow, like, really roughing it. Gyrick is fishing, and he throws a fish down on Trask's notes. Like, I'm not sure what Trask is trying to invent still. He's still trying to invent something. He's still trying to carry on his research.
Yeah.
And Gyrick says, it's hopeless. You know, you're wasting our time. Well, I'm out actually keeping us alive by getting fit. It's weird that they're also buddying up together, too.
Survival.
Yeah, survival pals.
Yeah.
I mean, they're definitely, like, it's a small allusion to Nazis that... hit out in South America following World War II that escaped Europe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many of them went to Argentina and the like. And I guess it's an allusion to that. But
you think?
Yeah, definitely.
You think they thought that hard about it?
Yeah, I think they did.
Oh, wow.
And because that's a theme that's, like, carried over in the movies as well. They're, you know, a lot of the, you know, well, not exactly, but it's just something, it's in the X-Men universe that they're dealing with, like, weird Nazi-esque renegades in South America.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's part of it. So, and I do think it's an allusion to that, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting. But then the
I thought it was... Sorry, go ahead.
No, what were you going to say?
No, nothing. I feel like that's reading pretty deep into it, you know? Like, if you're a vigilante and you, like, do something wrong in the United States, that's like an old trope, you know? Like, you go down to Mexico.
You go to Mexico as a vigilante, but as a Nazi, which I think we can compare Trask and Gyrick to. Well, they're not Nazis, but they're, like, mutant... They want to genocide the mutants.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it's them being in South America, to me, it's, like, it's too much.
Do they say that they're in South America?
They say they're in a blasted jungle.
Yeah, that could be Mexico.
Okay.
Central America.
It's deeper in South America than the desert. They're in the jungle part of South America. So, right, it could be Mexico, the jungly part of Mexico, but you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying.
I'm just saying the narrative trope is such that you would draw that,
okay,
that conclusion. At least
could
I
be.
Do.
Could be.
So the Sentinels come to kidnap them. The X-Men arrive. They get into another fight. But those guys still manage to get kidnapped. You had a funny remark about this fight. Like, Wolverine just jumps out of the plane. with no parachute.
Yeah.
You were quite surprised to see that.
It just was funny. He just, like, leaps out of a plane. He has, like, no... He's not attached to anything.
Yeah.
There's, like, nobody is swooping down to, like, break his fall, you know, like Rogue or Storm will sometimes do.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, that's true. But he does have an unbreakable skeleton, so he can't really be hurt by a fall.
I guess.
He could be temporarily bruised by one.
I was going to say, he doesn't have an unbruisable set of, like... organs and muscles, but
yeah, but the organs are protected by the skeleton, aren't they?
No, your organs are not encased.
I guess not his
skeleton.
Not his stomach, but his brain's encased by the adamantium.
That's
his skull. So and his neck is protected. His rib cage, neck, and skull are protected. his legs are protected too. His bones and his legs, if he lands.
Yeah.
So it, the only
his
thing
heart and brain will be fine.
And his stomach, it might be the only vulnerable part.
And liver.
Right,
and,
yeah.
Like, all your internal organs besides the heart.
Well, those will heal instantly anyway. So even if he, like, lands on a rock on his stomach, he'll
but
be...
But then why is he being caught in other scenes?
Like, because...
Because we've seen a lot of times where he's, like, falling from a great distance, and, like, Rogue or Storm or somebody who can fly will, like, swoop in and catch him.
Well, it's like we're talking about if he just falls from 100 feet and lands, which I think he could probably do and be fine anyway, but let's say it hurts him.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it hurts, so it takes him a few minutes to heal from that.
But here he's, like, so pumped up on adrenaline that he doesn't care about the pain.
No, I mean, he's
gonna run through it.
I mean, the point is he's fucking awesome. You know, it reminds me of Captain America 2. Winter Soldier, when he just leaps out of a plane without a parachute, and they're like, he doesn't use a parachute? And the other guy's like, nope. You know, that's just what he is. I mean, Wolverine's... I was going to mention that before, that Wolverine is Weapon X, which later is a retcon that means he's Weapon 10.
Uh-huh.
And Weapon 1 was Captain America.
Uh-huh.
So they're of the same, like, military experimenting, in a sense. So the point is, if you're a weapon of numbered 1 through 10, you can jump out of airplanes without parachutes.
Okay. We're still even on the vibranium versus adamantium score.
Well, that has yet to be fully explored, but I am interested to know about the difference between the two. But meanwhile, back at the mansion, Morph is feeling really inadequate about, you know, being, you know, traumatized. So he decides to hack the robot harder than Beast does.
Right.
He, like, throws the, like, computer panel switches up to 10, or up to 11.
Because that's how you hike.
Right.
Hack.
Yeah, that's how you hack, right? You just, like, really sets the robot to overdrive, and he gets the coordinates of where Master Mold's hiding.
Uh-huh.
Because he hacked harder, more aggressively. But then the robot explodes, Morph's okay. He hops into his own X-Jet to go off wherever the Master Mold is. At first, he's like, I should tell Scott. He's like, no, I shouldn't.
He's like, I got to do this myself.
Yeah, it's like, that's probably
great
not
idea.
The best. Yeah, why not share the information? You could still come. You could also tell him at the same time.
Yeah.
Then back in the underground cave, Master Mold is the three humans he wanted kidnapped. He tells them their plans. He's going to replace Professor X's brain with a cybernetic link or something. The X-Men arrive. They immediately start blasting Cyclops, Storm. You know, they attack the Sentinels. They actually look like they have things, like, under control.
Yeah, it's pretty successful.
Yeah, I mean, Storm does get buried under some rubble, which is her greatest weakness.
Yeah. I don't mean to laugh at that. That's pretty bad. I wouldn't like to be buried under some rubble.
Yeah, obviously. But the fact that it keeps happening to her, and the fact that, like...
They make it a point to say her claustrophobia makes that, like, the worst thing.
Yeah, it was actually funny this time.
Yeah.
Although all our listeners who got buried by rubble at some point survived, I apologize for making light of that, but still. But it happens to you, like, more than three times, and it does start to get funny. Master Mold grows spider legs at some point, and so things are...
It's his head. He's not attached to his body yet.
Right,
so, yeah, but just, like, spider legs come out the sides of his head.
Right, so he
can
move
around. It's almost like
Mojo.
Mojo, yeah.
Yeah. So he's, like, getting the best of the X-Men for a second, but then Morph arrives, and he starts shooting at Master Mold, and he saves the day. So it's good that he came.
Mm-hmm.
And then here, Morph, like, actually shows how useful he can be. He's not that useless. He turns first into Omega Red, and he's using Omega Red's coils to mess up the Sentinels. Then he turns into Sasquatch, who we saw from Alpha Flight. Then he also turns into, like, old school Angel,
mm-hmm.
which is crazy. Like, Angel not, like, in the X-Men costume, but in, like, some weird, like green and red and yellow getup, which we might have seen in the comics briefly. I don't know.
Yeah, but with his wings out with all their feathers, and he's saving Jean by flying and catching her, like... Yeah, it's really cool, actually. It makes you really, like, see how great a shapeshifter can be in combat.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And also, he also turns into Longshot, lastly, too.
Right.
I don't know how he knows about all these characters. I guess maybe the X-Men told him about him, but...
Well, he was an X-Men for a long time, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's true. But they've met some of these characters after Morph's time with the X-Men, too.
Maybe he reads the news.
Right, exactly. Who knows how he... Like I said, maybe Wolverine caught him up on all their old adventures and the long flight over in that first mission.
Yeah. I feel like shapeshifting is a really awesome power. And yeah. A lot of times when shapeshifters are shown using the powers, it's more like to be devious or sneaky. You know, like Mystique in the movies especially, or in the cartoon also, a lot of times when she's using her powers, it's not specifically to fight, although sometimes it is, but it's usually that she transforms into like a security guard or like somebody, you know, to like kind of slip between the cracks and not get noticed.
I mean, she'll turn into Wolverine at times.
Yeah.
Which is like, so Hugh Jackman can fight himself. Right. But you're right, they haven't like really shown Mystique go full crazy with her powers like the way Morph just did.
Yeah.
That's like a big... like mistake, like
it's awesome.
Like, I mean, everyone complains about Jennifer Lawrence, and I guess it's pretty fair, but it's like if she was turning into all these like amazing wonderful cameo characters and using their powers in like amazing special effects sequences, it would be way more badass.
Yeah,
you know, this
I would like to see that on film.
Me too. I don't think they're probably not gonna go there in the next movie, but you know Jennifer Lawrence is back again, so
right,
who knows. And then Morph actually fires the killing shot that finally takes out Master Mold. He shoots like a jagged rock in the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
It crashes through Master Mold's skull. There's like a massive, massive explosion. But the X-Men are very good at escaping from massive fireballs, like slowly expanding.
Yeah.
So they all get out alive, even Trask and Gyrick. And then we get to the ending. Morph reveals that in classic X-Men task fashion, he cannot stay with the team.
Right.
So just when you think they're going to get another new team member, that team member says, nope, I got to go. I can't deal with this. I've realized that I do have post-traumatic stress syndrome, and I need more healing. And Wolverine, as always, is kind of surprised, and more flies off in the distance. But Professor X does say, like, he'll always be an X-Man. Maybe he'll be back. And spoilers, he does come back at some point, but not in a way where he's a cast member.
Mm-hmm.
So that is this episode. A very good episode, like really great animation, very good. It's like pretty satisfying with some major implications. I mean, Master Mold's finally dead. I wonder how that changes things for Bishop.
Right,
and
his
future.
Well, that's the thing about the future, isn't it? It's always changeable.
That's right, yeah. But I mean, we've always seen enough to this. We talked about with Brendan last week that like no matter how many times Bishop goes into the past to save things, his future is still crappy. And that's kind of the way Bishop likes it, weirdly.
Right.
He's always commenting, like, oh, it's just the way I left it. Just old time home. I mean, not quite like that, but, like, the implication seems to be that.
He's back in the fold. It's the best place to be.
Yeah, maybe.
How would that quote go? You know.
So maybe the X-Men finally got rid of the Sentinels, and Bishop's future can be much sunnier and some, like, trees and things instead of just being an urban hellscape.
We also learned that Morph is the most Canadian of all the X-Men.
Yeah, why do you say that?
What was his goodbye speech to everybody? He's like, well, I was able to do it today, but sorry, not tomorrow. or something like that, yeah.
Well, as we know, a very famously Canadian cast because they wanted to hire Canadian actors who aren't subject to Hollywood Union dues.
Yeah.
So I don't think the actors got any royalties from the show.
I don't mean to like poke fun. I think like the voice acting is amazing.
Yeah, no, yeah,
just
the voice acting
is great.
Just when
I hear the accent come out, I enjoy it for some reason.
I mean, like we've discussed many times, by virtue of Wolverine being Canadian, there's a lot of Canadian like ties to the X-Men historically, which is kind of nice in a way. It's cool. So a very good episode, wouldn't you say?
Very good episode.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Black Panther real quick?
Yeah, okay.
I don't want to go through like a blow-by-blow Black Panther. I mean, everyone's listened to a million podcasts and blogs and think pieces and The Atlantic.
So we don't need to go into too deep of a commentary about it, but in general, what'd you think?
I really liked it. It was one of my favorite Marvel movies ever.
Yeah.
Not counting the X-Men films, because I don't know where to place them with the MCU. I see them as two different things.
Mm-hmm.
I had some small problems with it from a narrative standpoint and maybe some special effects. But outside of that, I really just love Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther.
Yeah, he's great.
And all the other character actors that were in the movie, too. His sister and his general
and you know, just all and Michael B. Jordan, Yango. Right? Yeah,
but yeah. Michael B. Jordan was great too.
Yeah, yeah. Just like some of the most beautiful people you've ever seen.
But also the acting was really impeccable. I think in a lot of movies, a lot of Marvel movies, but just movies, like a lot of times there's kind of a weak link where you're brought back into your brain and you're like, oh, this person is acting right now. And I actually didn't get that in this movie at all. I thought it was really consistently well acted.
Yeah, I think the acting was really great. That's like the highlight of the movie in many ways, is just the, all the performances.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can criticize some stuff. Like, I didn't like the ending with the Wakandan Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think that they would have a fight like that. Because, especially after Black Panther reveals himself to be alive.
Yeah.
That his best friend would continue to carry on with Killmonger's plans. And right. By the way, spoilers for the movie if you haven't seen it, but I'm sure you have.
Yeah. Yeah, if you haven't seen it, just turn off the podcast now.
they might have turned it off long ago. But yeah, so I just didn't like the Civil War. I don't think... it's like... T'Challa has revealed himself to come back from the dead. They're not surprised, and they're just going to keep following this guy who showed up to their civilization like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
You know, because clearly he didn't win the fight, which is the only reason you're even listening to him.
Right.
So I just didn't like that they all started fighting each other. I thought that was illogical and not narratively consistent. Because up to this point, the Wakandan society has been united and peaceful and also sort of... secluded, so the fact that they're just like off to like they're ready to rush off and cause this world revolution, it just didn't make sense that they would do that, especially with T'Challa being alive.
But yeah, that's the main thing for me, is that it seems like a plot inconsistency.
Yeah,
because they're all really
they're friends, you know,
devout to their traditions. I don't know how else to say it. I don't mean in a religious way, but I mean like they really keep the traditions alive.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make sense to me that they wouldn't just let Killmonger and T'Challa fight it out,
or that they would demand, not even if they had a fight, if they would demand that they would like talk out their differences.
Yeah.
So that was, I didn't like that. I just didn't like the fighting at the end.
I also thought that fight at the end was really strange, because one side was like T'Challa's guard, all female.
Yeah.
And the other side was his warrior friend, and that whole army was male. And so this like male versus female dynamic was really strange to me.
Oh yeah. Have people been talking about that? You pointed that out to me. I haven't read that anywhere. That at the end, it was almost like all women versus all men.
I didn't read about it anywhere. I just thought it was really weird. And I was wondering... It
stuck out to you, right?
Was that on purpose? Is there, like, a deeper commentary that's going on there? Is there something, like, from the comics that made them do it that way that I don't know about? Like,
to me, it seemed kind of coincidental that it was all men versus women. But you're right. There's something weird there, too. I don't think they meant it to go there, but perhaps...
I don't know either.
Anyway. I didn't like the special effects at the end with the fight between Killmonger and Black Panther. To me, it was just more of the same, like, CGI, like, superheroes.
Hmm.
And it was kind of poorly rendered. And I just thought it was, like, a lot of interesting discussion points about that online, saying that it's a problem in Hollywood because the special effect houses are all stretched very thinly. And they have to, if you watch the credits, it's like you see all these different special effects companies working on the same movie. And so when you're sharing between all these different companies and you have to get it done in a very fast budget, the results aren't always going to be that great.
Hmm.
And it's just, you know, it was kind of cheap a little bit at the end there, which is, it's kind of a shame because the movie ended up grossing $1 billion. So if they just polished it a little better, it would have stood as like a better classic, because I think at least the effects are gonna look a little dated in a few years.
Actually, now that you say it, that's probably right. I haven't really been reading online about it as much as you have, and I honestly didn't even notice that the special effects were a little bit chintzy as I was watching it. I think I was really captivated by the storyline and I was not distracted.
I mean, what do you think about the storyline? You know, there's a lot of debate and argument online about, you know, Killmonger was right and Black Panther was wrong, that, you know, he should have been able... Killmonger's this great villain because he's got complexity and he has actually a point of view. You know, like, that's the one. And I agree that Michael B. Jordan was amazing in the part.
Yeah.
And very sympathetic. But there's been, like, a lot of controversy over that division between the two characters and their viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
What did you feel about it? Like, how far do you think they could have gone with that? Or did they go far enough?
I don't really know. I mean, Killmonger's a revolutionary, but they show you his whole backstory and how he came to be revolutionary. And T'Challa is traditional.
Right.
And you know his whole backstory. He was raised royalty, so it makes sense that he would be like that. So to me, it's more about character development and storytelling, and that all fits to me.
Yeah.
The wider implications of, like, who won out in the end and if that's, like, good or bad in the, like, this universe, this, you know,
yeah.
I don't really, that's really, I mean, ambiguous.
If I want to get nitpicky about it, I could say that I have a problem with T'Challa, like, promising to build stem centers
uh-huh.
in Oakland. And he's like, I'm gonna, you know, start spreading my wealth and power into impoverished Black communities and, like, finally make a difference in the world. Now, I don't have a problem with that. My issue is that, like, Marvel films are, like, somewhat rooted in reality. That's where a lot of their narrative story power comes from.
Mm-hmm.
So, but at the same time, it's a Disney production. It's a corporate franchise. So you can't, like, by the time Black Panther 2 comes around, I don't think you can start showing the impact of T'Challa's, like, goodwill work he plans on doing. Without making it, like, too, like, out of step with reality. Because you can't, like, show, like, T'Challa fixing Oakland or, like, let's say Baltimore is a better example.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but the real-life Baltimore is still has a lot of problems. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so that's, like, an issue that a fictional, like, franchise film run by Disney can't solve or, like, reconcile with narratives.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're gonna straight up do, like, a crazy wish fulfillment. Which, what Wakanda is an African country to begin with. It's like a wish fulfillment. Like, imagine, like, a utopia in the middle of Africa where they've got, like, unbeatable technology and, like the most, like, no problems, you know, like, you know, they can heal bullet wounds to the spine.
Yeah.
Things of that, you know what I mean? They don't even need gold. They've got the natural resource of vibranium. They don't, like, their economy is, like, way more, like, amazing than mm-hmm. anything else in the world. So it's like, like, that's, like, you get into these weird spaces where you reconcile what reality is like for real Africans and real Black people, like, living with a lot of problems, versus, like, what T'Challa is promising to do to fix them
mm-hmm.
in the world. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, Marvel is, like, they're gonna get on, like, weird, like, shaky ground with, like, trying to, like, like what's gonna happen by the end of Black Panther 3?
Mm.
You know, when they try to complete the trilogy, like, because, like, obviously at this point T'Challa is trying his best to save the world, and it's like, but the world can never be saved, though. Right? So,
well, yeah. That's the thing, they address that, like, that's part of the argument that they have
yeah.
about whether they should start spreading their wealth and resources to the rest of the world, right? Like, the people who are more conservative and say no, we shouldn't. In Wakanda, mm-hmm. in this storytelling,
which is kind of weird in a way, that yeah. T'Challa's having an argument with Lupita Luango about
Lupita Nyong'o.
Nyong'o, yeah, about like, should we open up our borders?
Yeah,
and he's saying no, I don't think we should. That's just like, it's like, though, like, outsiders will ruin Wakanda. We can't, like, let their problems in,
right?
And
but that's, like, that's weirdly the point, prescient. Though. Like, that's the point that they're making, right? Is
yeah.
that yeah, they have vibranium and their economy is amazing, their technology is amazing, but it's not unlimited. They can take care of themselves and they can help a little bit, but they can't just fix the whole world.
I mean, but maybe they can. Killmonger seems to think they can, because I mean, Wakanda is a nation that is, like, straight out of a, like, science fiction fairy tale.
Yeah.
They've got flying, like, car spaceships and, like I said, can heal, like, all sorts of disease and other injuries.
Right.
And, like, who knows what else they can do.
Well, that's what makes conservatives conservative, though, isn't it? In real life, you've got billionaires who feel like they have to hold on to their money because what's going to happen to their legacy?
Right. Well, speaking of which, that leads to another problem I have, like, generally with the Black Panther, like, thing discussion that's going on, in the sense that Disney's like, yeah, we're gonna donate $1 million to Oakland to, like, build, like, a STEM center or something. They're giving, like, $1 million to some charity for sciences and math, you know, for, like, inner city youths, right?
Mm-hmm.
My thing, it's like, okay, that's good. I'm not going to, like, slag anyone for giving $1 million. It's more money than I'm ever going to have in my life, presumably, unless the X-Men Task podcast becomes some kind of social phenomenon. Uh-huh. But barring that flight of fancy. But to me, it's like, why not donate all the money you've made on the film to STEM centers in Oakland? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it just passed $1 billion in the box office.
Right.
It's like $1 million seems like nothing to a corporation like Disney. So while it's a nice gesture and it makes for good PR, it's not really, like, radical or revolutionary. And, like, you wouldn't expect that from Disney anyway as some, like, corporate behemoth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, part of the problem. I don't know. Like, it's, like, there's some kind of, like, dissonance there to me.
Well, the pledge was made before the movie came out, right?
No, it was made, like, I don't know. I don't know when it exactly was made, but you started reading about the pledge after the movie came out and was a big hit.
Right.
Yeah. That they were going to, quote unquote, put their money where their mouth was.
Oh.
But it's like, I don't think anyone realistically thinks Disney to solve the world's problems expects them to. Like, maybe they should. Like, that's another, like, you know, like, they certainly
might be within their power.
Yeah,
if
but
nobody else's.
I mean, that's a whole other argument. I don't want to, like,
Disney and Coke teamed up.
Yeah, oh my God. Well, I don't think we could trust those people. Do you mean Coke, like the Coke brothers?
No,
or Coca-Cola?
I mean, like, Coca-Cola.
Oh, I thought you meant the Coke brothers.
Oh, no. They're not saving anybody.
No, definitely not. Yeah.
We got real political here.
Yeah. So I just think that, like, it's just weird because the movie is supposed to be aspirational, and I think it is, and uh-huh. I think a lot of people are getting a really great message from it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good to see characters like the Black Panther, like his extended family, like, get on the screen and like, have this dialogue and represent what they represent. But at the same time, this is a movie, and it's fake, but the real world needs saving.
Mm-hmm. So Disney, you heard it here, please donate all the profits from Black Panther 2 and Black Panther 3 to your, you know, communities around the United States.
Well, not to keep belaboring this, but to me it's like, it gets to a weird place where Disney is putting out products that say, hey, we're saving the world, and they're really not.
I don't know if they're trying to save the world. I think they're trying to promote equity, and I think they're trying to tell stories.
Yeah.
And I think they're trying to make money.
Yeah.
I think
the bottom line is they're trying to make money.
Yeah.
Everything else is like window dressing.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I run into some dissonance, cognitive dissonance. It's like you said, if they're going to donate all the money, then great. But until they do so, it's like it's all... We shouldn't be looking to movies to save our society.
Yeah. I don't think we are, you know. It's just... It's a movie that, like, provoked a conversation, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily a movie that's claiming to be, like, some... I don't know. Some great savior to society at large, like...
It's not, but you know what I'm saying, though? It's like, it's one thing when Iron Man saves a day by blowing up the other robot and the world is quote-unquote saved.
Yeah.
But it's another thing when Black Panther's like, I'm going to, like, go into these real places and spread my, like, incalculable wealth and power to improve them.
Mm.
But in real life, the real places, there is no T'Challa doing that.
Yeah.
So, to me, it's like, that's where it gets weird.
Hmm.
Because it's almost like Disney is saying, it's like, T'Challa's out there doing this, like, don't worry, kids of Oakland that are in impoverished, like, circumstances. You know, somebody's coming out of the sky in a spaceship to, you know...
Nah, I mean, it's a movie.
Yeah, I know. But it's just like I'm saying, it's getting to the point, because these Disney movies are amazing, and they're, like, wonderful, and everybody's seeing them. Based on the box offices. So, but it's just like getting to this point where it's almost like confusing.
I don't think it's confusing. I think it maybe is a little sad when you watch the movie and then the movie's over and you go back to real life and you read the newspapers and you're like, aw,
yeah.
Where's T'Challa now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's like we need T'Challa and we need his like enormous generosity. And
vibranium.
Well, yeah, but not just the vibranium, but we need the generosity. And there's, like, dare I say, nations and corporations with the equivalent economic power to actually do something, and they don't...
And they're not.
They're not doing enough.
Yeah.
And we need them to do more. Dare I say, we need to make them do more through progressive...
social media pressure?
Well, that voting is number one. Yeah. Voting in this next election and... you know, people paying their fair share towards society.
Yeah.
If we want to live in a civilization. So, I mean, that's pretty damn political for the X-Men Test podcast, but hey, the show raised us. And that was that show had a very strong message, and we all know what it was. You know, tyranny is bad, giving is good, charity is good, protecting each other is good. So let's just leave it at that. That's all I have to say. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Make sure to join the X-Men Task Facebook group, and you can join in equally in the conversation, yell at us, praise us, share all your thoughts. It's a really nice community. We have new members joining every week. We have more people downloading our podcast than ever. I'd like to say thanks in large part to Brendan Jones. I want to give him another pop. He was great in the last two episodes. Mm-hmm. Make sure to check out all his podcasts, starting with Flight Through Entirety and his James Bond podcast. You can find all the links on our website. And also rate and review us 5 stars on iTunes. That would be very nice too. Sonia, any last words of wisdom for everyone out in X-Men Task Land?
Wakanda forever.
Okay, Wakanda forever. I can agree with that sentiment. Good night, everybody.
Good night.